right, I am on. Yes. Well, thank you guys for having me. Welcome to Aletheia Church again. My name is Kevin, as Justin already said. I am the campus director at our Massachusetts location. Funny story that Justin didn't tell when we was on the campus. So one day we go up to a guy and Justin goes, "Can I talk to you for a second about what you believe in the gospel?" And the man looks at Justin and says, "No!" And walk right the opposite way. You know, it crushed his little heart. I've never seen Justin frown so hard. He's always smiling and bubbly, but my wife and mother-in-law is there to see me as well, so you can say hello to them. But no, so today I'm here to speak to you about why it is that we at Aletheia believe in reaching the next generation. I saw Justin did a good job. Like, the reason that we exist is to bring the truth, grace, and change the power of the gospel for the glory of God and the good of all people. And that's the next generation of well. To be quite frank, it's in our DNA. I don't know if you know this, but Aletheia is a part of a larger network of churches called Every Nation. And they believe in reaching the next generation as well. And the way that we do that, the way that we accomplish that, is through three big things. One of those things is world missions. We have a whole arm dedicated to world missions, going into the nations, training and teaching people how to reach the different nations. And that's called 10 days. The other thing about Every Nation is we strategically plant churches capable of reaching students. Like, we don't just pop a church somewhere. We strategically plant it. There's no accident that Aletheia in Cambridge is planted between MIT and Harvard, or Aletheia in Boston is planted just steps away from Emerson College. There's no accident that Justin tried over 50 venues to plant right here, just steps away from Brown and RISD, because we have a heart to reach the next generation. But out of these churches, out of these church plants, we raise up campus missionaries who train and go reach the next campus, who take the church to the campuses. They don't sit here, they take it to the next generation. But before I became a campus missionary, I got to Boston following my own God, right? I wanted to be a dentist. So after graduating from the Florida A&M University, if you go there, that's how you have to say it, the Florida A&M University, with my degree in molecular cell biology, I moved to Boston and got accepted to Boston University, where I got a degree in, I got a master's in medical science. And right after that, the Lord said, "You will not go to dental school." It was probably the hardest decision I ever had to make with my walk with Jesus. You know, when I decided to follow God, I said, "I'll follow you to the ends of the earth. Just don't touch my career." But he did, and I am a campus missionary. And I thought that was the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life, but I think reaching the next generation is probably the hardest thing I ever faced. It's not easy. It's very difficult. It would be heart-wrenching. It's costly, as Justin said. We don't do it for money. Not at all. You'd be poor if you was in it for the money. We do it because we care. Like, you know that saying where people say, if you love someone good enough and you see a truck about to hit them, what would you do? You never heard that saying? So if you see a truck coming and about to hit someone, you would scream, I hope, right? You would tell them, like, "Hey, a truck is coming. Something's happening." Well, in campus ministry, the saying goes more like this. You see the truck coming. You see the person standing there. You not only scream at them, you not only yell at them, but you try to push them only to have them push you away and get hit by this truck. This is kind of like campus ministry. It's not easy. And we're going to look in the book of Daniel to see why it is we've reached these students. And we're going to specifically look at Daniel, his three friends, and Nebuchadnezzar, and see more of why we're going to reach the next generation. So before we open the book of Daniel, I want to tell you, the book of Daniel is like a book of paradoxes. It can be split into two halves. Like, chapter 1 through 6, this is the church Sunday. All the messages come from this part of Daniel. It's really encouraging, faith-filled. God is rescuing people from fires. He's doing all these amazing things. And then in the second half, you guys are in Revelation, right? It's like Revelation in Daniel. It's all these apocalyptic visions. But the overall message in Daniel is this: in spite of the present appearances, God is still in control. But what we're going to see is another message woven in between the pages, and that message is, it's vital to reach the next generation. And it's going to tell us reasons why. So we're going to be in Daniel's chapter 1, 2, and 3. You guys just cringe. I promise I won't keep you in church till 3 p.m. Maybe 2 p.m., just not 3. I grown up in church with my grandmother. We used to be in church from 8 to 12. Intermission, 12 to 4. That was just first service, though. But I promise I won't have you in church that long. So let's dive in to Daniel chapter 1. So the way it's going to work is I'm going to read a portion of the scripture, then explain it, go to the next scripture, because I want to highlight the important things of why we believe in reaching the next generation. If you don't have a Bible, I'll make Justin give you one for free at the connection area. So Daniel chapter 1, the words will be on the screen behind me. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judea, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Aspenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of nobility, youth without blemish, of good appearance and skill in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate, of the wine that they drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Ananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belshazzar, Ananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. So if you continue reading in this scripture, the king, you know, gives people food. But Daniel and his crew say, you know, we're not going to take that. We are going to be faithful to our God. And that's exactly what they did. They were faithful to their God. They were presented to the king, and they were well fit, better than any other youth in the nation. So then we're going to go down to chapter 2, verses 12 through 19. But in that chapter, Nebuchadnezzar has this dream, right? In chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and nobody in the land can interpret this dream. And they were about to get killed. All of King Nebuchadnezzar, important men, imagine that. Like, you were really important to the president. He goes, if you can't interpret my dream, I'm going to kill you all. Right? That's a scary thing. It's dark. It's grim. But Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel comes and says, wait, I can do this. So this is what the king responds to the people that said, we can't interpret your dream. Nebuchadnezzar says, because of this, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. This was included Daniel and his three friends. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch that the king's captain, why is the decree of the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel, and Daniel went and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation of the king. And then God reveals the dream to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar's dream to Daniel. And then we go to skip down to verse 26. The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream that I have and the interpretation? Daniel answered the king and said, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mystery, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dreams and the visions of your head as you lay in the bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in the bed, came thoughts of what would be after this. He who reveals mysteries made known to you what is it to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be known to the king, that you know your thoughts of your mind. Then Daniel interprets the dream. Stay with me, guys. Just stay with me. I know it's a lot of text. So Daniel interprets the dream, and Nebuchadnezzar says this in verses 46 through 49. Then the king, Nebuchadnezzar, fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offspring and incense be offered upon to him. The king answered him and said to Daniel, "Truly, your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal the mystery." Then the king gave Daniel high honors and made great gifts and made him ruler of the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wives of Babylon. Daniel made a request, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs in the province of Babylon. And then Daniel chapter 3, in this chapter, right, we're overviewing this. And then in Daniel chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar built this huge, I mean like 90-foot statue. It says, everyone, you have to bow down. All the nations, everyone under my command, have to bow down and worship this God. If you don't, you will be thrown into the fiery furnace. In verses 4 to 7, this was his command. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and language, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the burning fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. But not Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They said, "We're not going to do this." And Nebuchadnezzar gets furiated. I mean, his anger is burning so much so he turns the furnace up higher and kills some of his men in the process. He not only wants to scorch these men, he wanted to make a proclamation with these men. But at the end of the chapter, in 27 through 30, it says, "And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the king, counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, 'Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way.' Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon." Pray with me before we go in. God, thank you that despite what statistics may say about the next generation, that you are in control. I pray for the hearers of your word to have ears to hear and eyes to see. Help us see the importance of why reaching the next generation is vital. May the words of my mouth bring you glory. In Jesus' name, amen. So in the opening chapter, we see something. Nebuchadnezzar is going out for the exile youth, right? Nebuchadnezzar tell his leaders, "Hey, I want you to bring these youth to me." Now these youth, Daniel here was probably about, scholars say, 20 or way younger than that. But Nebuchadnezzar says, "Won't you bring them here to me?" And what he's doing is he's training them up in the culture of the Chaldeans and the ways of Babylon, right? And what his plan is, his ultimate plan, is to have them go into a position of leadership there with him or send them back home and have them as leadership over their home place. See, Nebuchadnezzar understood something, that reaching the next generation was vital in reaching the generations. Daniel and his friends, they were promoted to higher ranks in life. See, the next generation, what Daniel understood, they're going to be the future leaders of society, right? That's the first point. The next generations are going to be the future leaders of society. About 20 to 25% of the world leaders come to Boston, Massachusetts to get educated. I think like 8 of our presidents were educated at Harvard University. But the thing is, they're not coming to church. We have to bring the gospel to them on their campuses. Not only are they not coming to church, some other stats show like 50 to 70% of the kids who grow up in church, you know what happens? They eventually leave the church. 50 to 70%. That's a startling thing. And why it is, like they say, some stats say they grow up in kids' church. No offense to kids' church. I love kids' church. They grow up in youth group. I love youth group because I'm a youth pastor, right? But they never really sat in church anyway. What they were doing, they had a watered-down version of the gospel. I hope you're preaching the gospel at church, right? They had a watered-down version in youth group. So they were just hanging out with friends. So when it came time to go off, they never had the gospel in the first place. They were never taught this gospel. So when they went off into society, they didn't have the gospel with them. But Ed Stetcher did a study. This is where you and I come into play. The factors of why students come to church and why they stay in church is that one, the Bible is actually being preached. The Bible is being preached. The pastor's sermon is relevant to their life, Justin. And, you ready? At least one adult in church made a significant investment in them personally and spiritually. Just one adult made an investment in these students. So while we are sitting here in church and comfortable on Sundays, there are people out there in the next generation waiting for you and me to bring the next generation, to teach the next generation about this truth, about this gospel. Like U.S. Census said there's about 41 million kids, youth kids, 10 to 19, residing in the States today. Can you imagine what a world would look like about 50, 60, 70 million of our next generation had a heart and a passion for Jesus? What would that look for the culture? See, the next generation, not only going to be leaders, but they're going to be your policymakers. They're going to be policing our cities. They're going to be the ones educating our kids, our grandkids. Or, as society might call it, they'll be the ones heading down the wrong path. But we all have to deal with them. Truth of the matter is, if we don't have Jesus, if the next generation don't have Jesus, we're all headed down the wrong path. Nebuchadnezzar knew that reaching the next generation was important because that's how we reach the leaders of society. So, next point, like in Daniel's time, this generation is being indoctrinated by the culture, right? Like something is fighting for their attention. They're learning, if we're not gonna teach them, something's gonna teach them. And right now the culture is teaching them. They're raising this next generation. The church is sitting here silently while everything else is buying for their attention. And that's where we need to be. Culture is defined as a set of customs and mores and codes and tradition. The Babylonian culture was kind of similar to us. Daniel and his friends were taken to a place that was hostile to the gospel. Is the gospel welcome in your workplace today? When you go to work, is the gospel welcome there? Like, do you take it there? Do you feel welcome there? Neither way was Daniel was at. And they worshiped many gods, polytheistic gods, where Daniel was at. In today's culture, I don't think it's necessarily like polytheistic gods. I think the God of today would probably be the God of self. That's the culture that we grow up in now. James Davison Hunter of the University of Virginia, he says there's five fronts that we have to fight when it comes to culture. One is family, two is education, three is popular media, four is the law, and five is electoral politics. See, the culture is teaching our kids. If we won't teach them, then they were going to learn it somewhere in school. My wife is a special ed teacher, and I volunteer at a middle school. And they have these things called assemblies there where they're teaching kids about gender, sex, what they should do with their body, what they should think. They preach tolerance. It's only tolerance if it's non-biblical, though. So the culture is raising our kids to walk against the gospel. And we sit down and don't do anything. See, it's vital that we reach the next generation. I mean, the media, you can look at the media, right? What is the media's teaching? What used to be rated X is now commercials on the screen so we could see where culture is headed. It's not headed for the gospel. In fact, it's headed the opposite way. We reach the next generation because the culture of the next generation becomes the culture of today. We reach the next generation because the culture of the next generation becomes the culture of today. And we want to see a culture for the glory of God and the good of all people. And we see that not only are the next generation going to be leaders in established culture, but they take the gospel back to where they're at. In Daniel chapter 2, 17 through 18, it says, "Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and told them to seek mercy from God of heaven concerning the mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men." Daniel had a problem. And Daniel went and back to his house. And he said, "Guys, we have a problem. Let's seek the God. Let's seek God." Earlier, I told you, the Lord told me, "Nope, you're not going to be a dentist." But there was a pivotal moment in my life that helped me realize that. I was in Central Square. I think I was about to go meet Pastor Adam. And I met this kid coming out of the train station. At the point that I met him, he was 2 days homeless, and he was at an alternative high school. This high school was for kids with emotional behavior disturbances, right? And so I met him. We're talking. Long story short, I met him probably at the beginning of my program. 6 months into that relationship, I'm sitting across from his mother, and his mother says, "I grew up with that Jesus, or some form of it, but the one that my son has, I don't know it." See, my son, he never listened. I kicked him out. He's at the worst school in Boston, but now he's coming home and preaching the Bible to me. He's going to school preaching the Bible to his peers. In fact, this is the first time in life I've ever got a good phone call about my son in 15 years. So can you give me that gospel? See, he had a problem, and the gospel was the answer. But he took it to his house. And that family, the dad was out of the house, the son was out of the house. They are reconciled now. The third thing, we believe in reaching the next generation because it's a doorway into the family. Reaching the next generation is a doorway into families. Thank you, Chris. But can you imagine, like, what would the families look like? How many families, how many people come from a broken family? One that didn't know God. Or you come from a family that kind of knew God, knew about a Jesus, but didn't really live it. What would the families look like? I mean, studies show if you want to impact culture, family life is where it gets established. Are you raising your kids in the way they should go? Or are you too busy working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, building up another kingdom while the culture of this world raises your child? They're going to be leaders. They're going to establish the culture. They're going to have their families of their own, or they're going to be a part of some kind of family. Whether it's this gospel-centered family, it's up to us. It is important that we bring the truth, grace, and changing power of the gospel to the next generation. And we want to see that. And we're going to go and dive on to chapter 3 now. And most people read this chapter and go, "Man, God, he really rescued people from a fiery furnace?" Like, right? Can you imagine being Nebuchadnezzar setting up the scene? If I don't have props here. But let's say I am in a fiery furnace, right? I disobeyed Nebuchadnezzar. He throws me in this fiery furnace. And I say to him, "I'm not going to bow down to you," right? And he see me, but I come out just as fresh as I am now. Like, I walk into the furnace, he think I'm going to burn, and I come out just like real fresh. Nebuchadnezzar's mind is blown. He's confused. But there's something else in this chapter that I think we kind of overlooked if you read this. And it's something about the decrees of Nebuchadnezzar. He makes two decrees here that I want to kind of focus on. The first decree we find in Daniel chapter 3, 4 through 6. He says, "You are commanded, O people, nations and languages that when you hear the sound of the hornpipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that the king has set up. And whoever does not worship the idol shall be immediately cast into the fiery furnace. You keep reading the story. We know Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they go, I'm not having that. I am not going to serve any other god but my own. And these are youth kids. And this is what they say in response. Our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hands, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. And then the second decree comes. We know God rescues them out of the fiery furnace, and they're just as fresh as they were before they went in. Here's the second decree that he makes in verse Nebuchadnezzar makes in Daniel 3-29. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn from limb to limb and their house laid in ruins, for their lives is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. What is so special about these decrees here? They commanded the nations to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar. The first decree, he tells them to bow down to this golden idol, this image, this God. And the second decree, he tells them that anybody who speaks against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall essentially be killed. So them not bowing down, help this gospel message reach the nations. See, Nebuchadnezzar, his territory stretched from what is today for Egypt to Western Iran, from modern Syria to Saudi Arabia, encompassing many different languages and peoples of different tongues and many different nations. There's about 1 million international students studying in America today. About 1 million, roughly. Do you know if a decree like that went out today to say, we will serve the God of Meshach, and Abednego, or we will serve the Christian God? 1 million international students, you know where they go after they study here? If they don't stay here, they go back to their nation. Do you know what world relations would look like if we go bring the gospel to those campuses? It'll look a little bit more like heaven on earth. We believe in reaching the next generation so we can reach the nations. This is why we bring the truth, grace, and changing power of the gospel for the glory of God and the good of all people. That includes the next generation. And as we continue to study on in Daniel's life, Donna Nolan Feewell, in her book, she sees how Daniel's life develops and continues to reach the next generation. In her book called Circle of Sovereignty, she summarizes Daniel's life with this. She says, we have seen the Hebrew sage climb the political ladder from captive prisoner to initiate to sage in chapter 1. In chapter 2, to chief sage, to administrator over the province of Babylon from chapters 2 to 3, to the king's personal advisor to chapter 4, to the third ruler in the kingdom in chapter 5, to the prime minister that the king himself intends at the beginning of chapter 6, to set over the entire kingdom and thus implicitly set over the kingdom at the end of chapter 6. And during all these transitions, Daniel was known and taught that our God is the only one worthy to be praised. Daniel taught through the generations. Another way to put this is the psalmist says in 78:5-7, he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. We believe in reaching the next generation so we can reach the generations. When you and I are gone, who's going to teach the next generation? The generation right after us, and then the generation after them. But what will they be learning? You and I have a job to reach the next generation. At the end of chapter 4, This is what Nebuchadnezzar says. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, for all of his works are right and his ways are just, and those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. We see a different Nebuchadnezzar speaking here than we did in chapter 1. He goes from acknowledging this God to praising this God, to worshiping this God. And who does God use to reach Nebuchadnezzar? He doesn't use his magicians. He doesn't use the Chaldeans. He doesn't use anybody in a court of that nature. He used some young kids and his friends to reach Nebuchadnezzar. He used the next generation. That's who he used. And my last point, we believe in reaching the next generation because Jesus did so. Jesus, that was his motto. When Jesus came to bring the truth, grace, and change the power of the gospel to the world, he didn't go to the Pharisees or the Sadducees, the well-educated, everybody with the accolades. He went to the young men and said, I'm going to educate you. You're going to influence the culture. You're going to reach the nations. His disciples were young men. Jesus brought the gospel. Jesus brought the truth. I mean, literally brought the truth, right? He was the truth, right? So he brought the truth to his disciples. And he said, you are going to preach and reach the next generation. And for some of us in here, we may come up with a bunch of excuses of why we can't reach the next generation. You may go, oh, I don't have time, right? I don't have time to reach the next generation. That's a false idol that we all serve at some point. Or you go, well, you know, I don't know enough about the Bible. What if they ask me a question that I don't really know? That's a big thing that I get at MIT. Man, do you get some really hard questions? I go, yeah, but the gospel's still the same. Same answer all the time, right? The gospel is the same. And if you don't know it, I just ask God for the wisdom. The one who reveals the mysteries of heaven and earth. I mean, if he was speaking then, surely he could speak to me to answer a question. But if I don't know it, you know what I say? I don't know. How about I walk with you? When Justin was there, I used to be like, you know what? I would love to grab lunch with you. Justin is going to pay for your lunch, and we can have a conversation about pursuing this later. Thank you, Justin. Or some other excuses we make. We say, well, I don't know anyone to invest in. I don't know. Like, who can I talk to? Here's the reason why none of your excuses are valid or none of them matter. If the gospel stops with you, you probably didn't have it to begin with. Like, if the gospel stops with you and it ends there, you probably didn't have it to begin with. So none of your excuses are valid. God just didn't command us to hold this to ourselves. He told us to go preach the gospel, reach the generations. Christianity wasn't meant to be comfortable. In fact, it's probably the most inconvenient decision you've ever made with your life. But it's so worth it. See, the next generation, they're going to grow up to be leaders. They're going to grow up to establish culture. The nations will be developed by them. They're going to influence families. And what they learn and who teach them, they're going to teach the generation after them. Reaching the next generation is not optional. It's not a choice that we have. It's vital for their survival. Reaching the next generation is vital for their survival. And if you believe in this changing power of the gospel, if you found yourself in one of those excuses, I want to challenge you. Turn off the TV set. Stop working so many hours. Stop overcommitting to senseless things, because while we are out there doing that, somebody and something is raising up our generation, whether it's the culture that they're in, the school, the media, their friends. While we are too busy playing church, clapping hands, checking off a box, the next generation is being swallowed up whole. And being sold a lie, an idol. And you know why campus ministry is sometimes like screaming at a kid and pushing a kid, trying to get him away from this truck? It's because they brought the lie that society has sold them. And we sit here with the truth of the gospel, and they want to hear it, and they desire to hear it. and we are afraid and we come up with excuses, but we don't have an option. We have to go take this gospel to the next generation. They're going to be a part of our lives. They're going to be here. And God tells us to go and reach the next generation. So there's like four kinds of people that we can see here, right? First, the Christians. If you're a Christian in here, I want you to do something. I want you to pray about one person, just one person in the generation under you that you can take through the gospel. I don't want an excuse. I just want you to pray. Think about who you can take. Whether you're 60, 50, 40, on down, think about one person. And when you have that person in your head, I want you to grab the one-on-one book. Make an investment in the one-on-one book. I think you can purchase it back there at the connection table. It's a great tool that you could use to take somebody through. It has an introduction. The student could tell you all about their lives, and then it's a great opportunity for you to share your gospel. Just be present. Like, grab on to somebody in the next generation and be present. I guarantee you, you will break through their lives. It will be difficult. It will be heart-wrenching. I mean, I guess my generation is too. Am I the next generation? I don't know. But they are so flaky, man. They are flaky. Like, you pour milk on them, a bowl of cereal, cornflakes, ready to be served. Right? They're flaky, but they are worth it. This is so rewarding. When they get the gospel and take it to their family, when they get it, take it to their friends, when they get it and become the next leaders, what world will we live in? See, we are making an investment, not just in this generation, but the ones that come after us and the ones to come after them. But if you're not, maybe you're in this room and you're like, King Nebuchadnezzar, you was around Christianity for some time, you've seen this Christian God like do miracles in your friend life and you wrote it off to some high intellect. But now's the time to stop observing this Christian God and start experiencing it. Come see the truth. You have questions? So do I. But this God can reveal the mystery. Come see the truth. Or maybe you're in this other set of group where you say, you know what? I don't got no problem preaching the gospel. I'm a Christian. But I really need God to show up in my life today. Like, if God don't show up in my life and do something like he did here, I don't know what's going to happen. Before you leave, come pray with me. Come pray with Justin. Come pray with some of the leaders. Let us bring that, like Daniel, who brought the problem to his companions. Come share with your brothers and sisters, because we believe in the truth and the changing power of the gospel, that God can change any circumstances. Or maybe you consider yourself a part of this next generation. And my question to you is, will you allow God to use you to change the world? Will you allow God to use you to change the world? So before we take communion today, I want to pray over us that God will give us courage and boldness to go and reach the next generation. Pray with me.